Okay, good morning, everybody. We'll call the Firefighter Advisory Committee meeting to order, 9:02. And before we begin, I would like to just remind everybody that is here today to make sure you did sign in with TEKS so that you can get your CE credit. And if you haven't done that, please do so at the break or sometime during the meeting. Also, before we get any farther, I'd like to just take a quick moment, for a moment of silence for the men and women in the fire service, especially in the state of Texas in the last couple of months since our last meeting. If we'll take a moment of silence to remember those that have given their lives serving their communities and the communities and people they're responsible for. I also want to put a special note in there for a battalion chief here in Austin named Travis Marr, who is battling cancer right now. We'd like to keep him in our prayers and his family as well. So if we'll take a moment of silence, please, I appreciate it. Thank you. Okay.
Get going, man.
You want to take attendance and we'll get started?
Sure can. Item number one, roll call and excuse of committee members. We've got Daniel Buford.
He just texted me a few minutes ago and he has a family illness, so he will not be here. We'll excuse him.
Okay. We've got Jim Reedy.
Here.
Jim's here. Antonio Ramos.
Here.
Myself, Keith Schmidt, Jason Collier.
Here.
Vince Abrego.
Yes, sir.
Daniel Anderson.
Oh, Daniel Anderson, sorry, Daniel.
And myself. And then I spoke with Ken Swindle and he had an emergency with his department and he'll be excused as well. He will not be here today. So we're missing Daniel and we're missing Ken.
Ken. Item number two?
Yes, sir.
Item number two, review approval of the September 15th, 2022 Firefighter Advisory Committee meeting minutes.
Okay, has everybody had an opportunity at least briefly scan through here and make sure that this looked correct? Does anybody see? Does anybody see or notice anything that needs to be altered or amended? If not, I will entertain a motion to approve.
I make a motion to approve the minutes as presented.
Okay, got a motion from Jason Collier. Anybody second? Daniel Anderson seconds. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
Item number three, rule review amendments to 37 Texas Administrative Code, TAC Chapter 13, Chapter 427, Training Facility Certification.
Okay, so this has come through our committee already once before and we sent it on to the commission.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
So could we bypass this while I send Amanda some documents for the committee to help us review that?
We could do that, or could we start discussing it while the documents are being printed?
I'd like to think I'm that good, but.
Say that again, Karen.
Yeah, so we could, I guess, but I think it would be more helpful if we had the information before we started discussing.
Okay. We'll go ahead and do that. Yes, sir.
Three of us are bailing out of here before long. It was number one on the agenda. Everything should be prepared, ready to go by now.
Okay.
Okay.
How long will it take to get that forwarded on and printed?
You know what?
All we have.
Let's go ahead. No, no.
To us, I mean, we can't start with documents that nobody ever even been seen before.
Well, I think Jim's referring to some documents that he had emailed a couple of months ago, and I'm not sure if everybody on the committee's had an opportunity to look at those documents. I've seen them before. I mean, it's been a couple of weeks since I've looked at them, but.
Did he send them to the committee? I didn't receive anything from Jim.
Well, that's what he's trying to do right now, is to get those printed, but it's more of a point of reference.
It's a reference point, that's all. It's the pages from NFPA that we should be, you know, at least meeting the minimum on. That have to do with the material I sent it to Daniel either at or after the last meeting, is those were some of the issues, so, you know.
Would it take very long, Amanda, to?
No, sir.
To do that?
Quickly, as soon as, if you can email it to me, I can do it.
Because out of all respect to the folks here that need to get back on the road and have come a long way for the meeting, we don't want to delay that at all. So rather than jumping into the next item, because we don't know how long it'll take us to get through that, can we just pause the meeting here for just a couple minutes to wait for those documents, if it'll be that quick? You sure?
The documents cover everything. There's a lot here to talk about. Well, I don't know why we can't start talking about some other stuff while we get the documents.
That's what I was suggesting.
Start talking, then. That's fine.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff here.
Right. So let's go ahead and just jump in, and then we'll wait for the documents, and then we can pick up the conversation when the documents come in, if anybody has questions or reference with that. But for right now, let's go ahead and begin our discussion on agenda item number one. Commissioner, we have your committee here, and you were the chair of that committee, so.
Yes, sir. I'd like to introduce, excuse me, I was the chair. We have Chris Anger, Mick Moffitt, Rick Sedello, and Rick Wallace that are on that. And about seven of them were not able to attend. Going back to your last firefighter advisory and going through the audio, there was discussion, and then in the end, your committee approved the 427 document as stated with a few changes to verbiage, and that was the vote that came out of the 427, out of the firefighter advisory. Then we got some questions from Commissioner Jones that all of the committee has had time to look at. And once again, it goes back to 1851, and from what, and there's information available if we need it, about what actually is in that, what's in Appendix A, what Rick is doing with his group as far as inspections and SOPs, and how it pertains to the realm of the whole thing. And from everybody on my committee that we have discussed, that we have a document that is ready to be presented once the verbiage was changed as the request by the firefighter advisory to fit what needed to be done in the document.
Okay, and to bring everybody up to speed, including our guests that are here today attending the meeting, the 427 committee had spent a considerable amount of time reworking this document, and if you look at your notes, you'll see a lot of new wording and a lot of revisions to the document. It did come through this committee. Additional discussions were made, additional revisions were made, and we came up with what we thought was a clean document, and it went on to the commission. At the commission meeting, it was decided to send it back through to us again, and we made the decision to have a joint meeting again with the 427 members who did the initial legwork to get this where it needs to be. Having spoke with Chief Wisco as well as Chief Steelman, the chair of the commission, we're wanting to get this done, but we're wanting to make sure it's right. So that's really the reason we're taking it back through our committee here again today, and then the commission will look at it again. We do want to finally get this behind us so we can move on to bigger, better things, but we don't want to do it hastily and make sure we miss something that we'll have to come back and correct at a later date. So we want to make sure it's right today before we send it on to the commission.
I think everybody may have had the copy of the November 21st information that came from Pat. Some of it's in red. And it details what the questions were and how the verbiage needed to be done. And as far as I know, and from discussing it with him, he's out of the country is the reason that Pat's not here. This information also went to Amanda to clear that up and to make that as needed to be stated out of the firefighter advisory of y'all's last meeting.
So, Commissioner, what date did he send that email?
This is dated November 21.
Okay. I remember reading it, but I'm not finding it in my emails.
I think there was a copy put
on
the
table. There's a copy on your desk.
There's a copy
Amanda
on your desk.
Passed it out.
Oh.
I have extra ones if you need.
Okay.
And from visiting a couple of times, well, actually more than that, with Pat, and Chris Anger, they're both more so in training facilities than anybody on the committee that's available in the present, that it's good.
What is it?
So your committee likes the way the wording is in the entire document right now?
Except for the changes referencing the training facility. Yes, sir, that was...
To try to clarify the commonality in language?
And also, like I said, coming off of the firefighter advisory verbal side of that, it's a good document, run it, just change the verbiage.
And I also look at that, you know, where we made those changes there, where there was some question about whether those records and things like that needed to be print or electronic. I mean, as long as that meets the intent of what we're looking for and we're doing compliance, I'm good with even making sure that that verbiage is in the document as well. So, and that's some of the stuff that we wrote in red right there.
So you're saying the...
Did you get it?
The red that Pat submitted, y'all are okay with?
Yeah, so you look down there, like on 427.11, where it's talking about records and material,
right,
when you get into records and things like that.
It says print or electronic.
As long as it meets the intent of what we're trying to do from a compliance standpoint, from a committee standpoint, we don't, I'm not going to make issues.
This is the crux of the whole argument. It's basically Pat's email that he... You need, Pat, here you go, I've got an extra. I've got an extra file.
Yes, sir.
Because I have Pat's original. We have it.
Thanks. So does anybody on our committee have questions on what Chief McAuliffe had forwarded to us to clarify?
I sent it to you.
You see that stack of papers?
Yeah.
That's everything you just sent her. I've already got it.
Oh.
I'm smarter than that. Good. Oh. We are bringing everybody a copy of Mike Jones' email, though, because that, for some reason, didn't make any of it.
Okay.
Well, his email is actually in Pat's notes.
It's what, yeah.
It is.
What
generated it is, but we need the original email. Okay.
So do you want to discuss this one item at a time here with Pat, reference to the certified training facility versus training facility? Is that where we should start with this? Or do you want to go through each section, subsection?
Wisco has a pile of information that I sent them to, so he already printed all that stuff off. He's way ahead of the game.
We do have copies of 1851 and the appendix. That's necessary or necessity. I don't speak very good, but anyway, it's available through copyright laws and things of that nature. If a copy is used, it will have to be returned because they're not for you to take home because of copyright laws that we have to deal with NFPA.
Well, so my information that I sent was just pictures of the pages.
I'm just telling you what was told me.
Yeah, so.
Because of rules and regulations we have to deal with NFPA. They're kind of sticky.
They are.
You play their game or you don't play.
I think most of us are well aware that how that works with them. Okay, so with Pat McAuliffe's email, I guess everybody does have a copy of that. So he is referencing some questions. I believe those questions were generated by Commissioner Mike Jones, and that was Chief McAuliffe's response to Commissioner Jones' questions from the emails that he had received.
I tried to get who he got these from, but was never able to do that. So I believe there was a little bit of study done, and you know, they are legit. I would like to, and I asked him more than once, I wanted to know who they came from, just for reference, but I never was able to get that.
Okay.
So does the statute refer to certified training facility or training facility, would be my question.
Chief Wisco, can you weigh in on that? Or
the rules say certified training facility. The statute only talks about training facilities.
So currently, the wording in the document is training facility.
There's a Word document with those.
And I do want to point something out, and it might not be noticed, but nothing in there where it says training facility is in bold. So that has not been changed from the original rule. And remember, this is a rule review with recommendations for changes. Nothing's been recommended to be changed in that. So what you're reading right now is the way it's been since 1993. And it's worked up until now. I think everybody knows we're talking about training facilities. And that is consistent with what's in the statute.
Is he trying maybe to get to a training facility that we regulate?
We only regulate the ones we regulate. I mean, I don't know. It's semantics.
I don't know. So I'm wondering, that's all. I don't know.
I guess without really knowing the intent of the question that got emailed to us, I
don't have any idea.
Yeah.
It was just blank. I mean, pretty straightforward. Well, Dave, you were at the commission meeting when he said he had received those. I wish we'd have asked for them then, but evidently he didn't have them at that time.
Is the question the word certified? Is that the question? Or?
Well, that was just the question that came. He said throughout the document, it's referenced to training facility instead of certified training facility. And it doesn't, I don't see, if we're dealing with it, or if Rick is dealing with it, it's a certified training facility.
Right.
Before they leave, it will be certified, or whenever they get everything done up to what needs to be done for Rick. If we don't control what they do, then we don't control what they do. It would be a reference for them to go by, but Mudflat Volunteer Fire Department doesn't go by what we have to do. Correct?
Yeah. No. I mean.
So we're dealing strictly with TCFD certified, regulated training facility. Rick, step in anytime.
I kind of agree. It's kind of a semantic thing. But we're only going to have regulatory authority over those that are within our purview. So
Rick, if we left the wording as it is right now, that's not causing an undue hardship on anybody, right?
Not from a compliance standpoint.
And Chief Wisco, to your knowledge, that has not caused a confusion amongst
the I don't think the agency's had a problem enforcing the rules since 93 on them. So I think it was a suggestion from somebody, and I think it can be considered, and we move on. We're not having an issue as far as the agency is concerned.
I agree. Unless anybody else on our committee has a comment, it was brought to our attention to take a look at it. We've taken a look at it. We do not see a need to revise it. It's been in there for a long time.
So we're going to leave it as training facility.
I would agree with that, Commissioner. Okay. And to your point, whoever made this suggestion or recommendation, perhaps if they were here or we knew who they were, they could explain where their concern was. Maybe it is contradictory somewhere in this document, but being that we can't find it, we don't see it, we don't know where that confusion is on their part.
Well, can we ask if there's anybody in the building that would want to voice their opinion about that or have any input?
I'd like to keep it to this room. Okay. There's too many people in this building.
I mean, in the room. Sorry. We don't care what TEA
We'll be here for 3 days.
We don't care about TEA.
But to Chief Wisco's point, any of our guests that are here today, if anybody has a comment that they wish to weigh in on this 427, that's why we're here. Hopefully that's why you're here, or one of the reasons you're here. If you have an opinion or a voice or a thought, please let us know. Please go to the podium and introduce yourself and make your statement. Okay, we can at least put that issue to bed, right?
Right. So, Amanda, you're good with that?
I'm sorry, I missed it.
Well, everything under that throughout the document is referred to training facility.
Okay.
And the question came up to change it to certified training facility. That will not take place.
Training facility stays.
Okay, on item number two then, it was referencing the online electronic resources in the wording.
And Chief Anger?
Yeah, all I was looking at on that was and this will refer back to Rick on that, in terms of compliance, you know, they will check for a reference library, and as long as they can confirm that electronically as well as something that's a print document, that I don't have an issue with it from a committee standpoint. I just want to make sure that that's something that's, when we start going out to do our compliance inspections, that that's not going to cause an issue from compliance.
No, sir. We've actually been working with electronic media for several years, so we're good.
And so that's why I'm saying I think from a committee standpoint, when we look at that print or electronic, and that satisfies record keeping as well as reference material, we take no issue with that. That would be a good way to go ahead and put that in there as a side note.
So under 427.11, reference material, would we be adding in that verbiage then that says print or electronic?
Yeah, because we don't have that in there currently, because the question, let me go back to the question. It just says include the availability of online electronic resources in the verbiage, and so that's the way we address the question.
Okay.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, can I weigh in right quick?
Yes, sir.
Just to let you know, for IFSAC accreditation, if you are a certified training facility, whether it's online or on site, you have to have physical copies of the references in your library. In case the online situation goes down, your students and your instructors can still function in an offline thing and have availability of those references. I think Pat just wants to add the electronic and stuff like that because that's the age and the wave that we're going. But just so you know, you do have to have physical copies in the library.
Is there a language we can use exactly what you're saying to just put in there to
I think the language
that?
Already exists. The language is already in there. It's specific. You have to have the material.
But it still has to be physically available to all instructors and students at all times.
But IFSAC's voluntary. We don't, if they get it, they get it. If they don't, we're not requiring IFSAC, correct?
No, we're not requiring it, but if we want to maintain our accreditation, then we need to maintain that they have to have a physical copy in a library.
Yeah, so. What you're saying is right. What you're missing, I think, for the agency to maintain its accreditation, we have to require the training facilities that we certify to meet the obligation of the accreditation if they're going to teach a class
right.
to get certified by us. So we can't allow electronic-only copies of reference material because IFSAC doesn't allow that.
But this states print or electronic. But
that is a suggestion. That's in red.
That's not what it says.
And that was the point that I was trying to make.
Right.
As long as that did not create a compliance issue. If it
right.
creates a compliance issue, I understand.
So wherever this concern came from, they're saying, how come it can't say this? I think our response is because we're obligated to meet the accreditation requirements, and so that's why it doesn't specify a difference. You have to have the physical copies. And that's why the rule currently is written the way it's written. So from the agency standpoint, I think it would be disruptive and a problem to allow this because it'll challenge our ability to get remain accredited.
And Commissioner Hamilton, just to say that the reference material is just one book of the curriculum that you teach. You don't have to have reference material for every student that you have in a class. It's just that if I'm taking a fire officer one class, the internet goes down and I'm trying to do something, I should be able to go to my instructors and say, hey, I need to get in the reference library and grab a physical copy of Fire Officer 1, which is what I'm attending, to be able to continue what I'm doing. So that's basic the thing. When IFSAC does their accreditation visits, they go to a training facility, and one of the first things they do, besides observe skills or whatever, is they want to physically see the reference library of that training facility. And that's physical copies.
Okay.
I think in Pat's email here, he's just trying to accommodate the concern that's being brought up. But I don't think it's plausible to accommodate.
And that was the discussion, is as long as we did not impact
right.
compliance. And so,
right.
and I didn't even think about the accreditation aspect.
Yeah.
Of that.
And I think the big deal is about physical copies for every student. It doesn't require a physical copy for every student. It's just for that one copy of the of the curriculum of that book for that discipline that you're certified to teach in that training system. Does that make better sense, Mr. Chairman?
So in essence, we're going to do the same thing as we did. We looked at it. We're going to leave it as is in the current rule, and we move to number three.
Yeah. Anybody else have questions or comments? But number two, we'll leave it as is.
Just print.
Okay, number three, 427.137.
C.
I need to make a clarification there. There is no 427.137C. There is a section C. 7 is referencing part of B.
Yeah.
If you read the rule, you have a section A, a section B, and then a section C under 427.13.
Right.
So that 7 should not be in there. Wherever this question came from is in reference to 4 hurt.
Now's the time to do it.
Keep us from coming back to another meeting just to make that change.
Yeah. So we're talking about adding the term printed or electronically in 427.13A after the words training records. We would insert it there and do the same for C.
So what about the other language, the regulated training entity that's in the email?
That's already in there. Those changes are already in the rule.
Okay, are we good with number three on this agenda list here?
Yep.
The questions? Okay, let's move on to number four then.
Yeah. You got that, Amanda?
Where do you want to insert a C as well?
After records. All records.
All records. Are you all okay with comma, print, or electronic comma, or do you all want to keep the parentheses the way that you have it?
Well, let's muddy the waters a little more here. So right now, we're deleting the term training records, the word training.
What?
No.
On C?
No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, on C you are.
So I would recommend that we not delete the term training and have that pretty much read like A.
When we deleted training, what else were we trying to capture?
I don't know.
That's what I was fixing to ask the committee. What were y'all looking at in C when you deleted training and added all?
I don't know why we struck that. I C would still read fine with training still in there. I don't know why we struck that. I don't remember. Let me look and see if I've got some notes on that. Hold on.
A says shall be maintained and C says must be maintained.
Who was this? Sorry. Oh. Can I make a suggestion, please, sir, Mr.
Sure,
Chairman?
Sure.
For the verbiage, instead of saying printed and or electronic, would it be better to say it? The records are physical and or electronic, physically on site, instead of saying printed. I mean, that's up to you guys. I know it's more verbiage, but must be maintained physically or electronically. I know we're getting into semantics there.
Okay. Well, I mean, now's the time to discuss this, so.
That's just my suggestion.
Commissioner, what does your committee think on that?
The words to me mean kind of the same thing, but if you want it to, they've got to be submitted either on paper or electronically.
If we change it, it's really not changing anything. You're just adding extra words. The meaning's still there as is, because records are records regardless of whether they're print or electronic. But that's.
Well, I know it's just semantics and it makes common sense to you and most of us in the room, but that's the reason we're here discussing this. It doesn't quite play out that way to everybody else. So,
Reading all this, though, and thinking back to the original change that came from the committee, the word training being struck, what C is actually saying is that all records must be maintained, all records at that facility. They took the word training out because there might be records that don't deal with training. They deal with something else, but it's a record of that training facility.
So that's where we go back to the regulated training entity, because we were talking about that might be something different than a fire department. It may just be a regulated training entity, but I think you're on to something there, Mike, because I couldn't find the actual verbiage. I've got that, I believe, in email from...
I mean, I'm sitting here reading it, trying to think back 6 months ago when we had this conversation, and the wording in C is all records, training records, attendance records, any of it.
Yeah.
I mean, anything you would want to, and it says they have to be maintained. We're not telling them how they have to maintain them. We're just telling them they got to keep them. I don't think we care. I don't think the rule or the law cares how they keep them. They just need to be able to demonstrate it when we ask to see them for whatever reason. So I don't think, I'll keep my opinion myself. I think if you made the change in A that gives you the option of electronic or print, I think that's okay, because that's just clarifying that we're good either way. But I think that would be the only change. And then I'm going to hold my next comment till we're done with this. I don't want to muddy the waters, but I've found an answer to something else.
I see your point. I agree with you as well. But I'd like to hear from your committee, Commissioner Hamilton.
After he says that, if he does refer to all training, all records.
Well, you're deleting the word training, though.
Yeah, deleting the word training and just going all records.
But I don't think we want to do that on A. I think that we're specifically talking about training records.
Correct.
Because when you look at the verbiage below that, we're talking about the training subject, the date of instruction, all of that. So I think you can clean the whole thing up just by changing A and just say training records, printed or electronic. Take it from there. And then the other records that they're being referred to in C, as Mike has already stated, when we're talking about those records have to be maintained for a period of 3 years, he's not getting into the semantics on that part of it. We're just talking about training records as what was asked about. And I think that's where we get to the heart of the matter is in A right there.
I think the real confusion is on the part of whoever raised the question. They just quoted they put the wrong numbers and sections in there. Trying to clean that up, I think we focus on 427.13A, and you add the word print or electronic, and we're good.
Yeah.
I think everything else we leave alone.
I'm good with that.
I'm good.
Everybody on our committee good with that?
We're good.
And I'm sorry to sit here and try to dictate how we do it. I'm just trying to make sense of here without all the information. So okay, we're just going to make the change and
make the change on A and leave C as is.
Yep. Correct.
Yep. That's committee's recommendation.
Okay, we agree with that as well. So
we'll
make that change as part of our recommendations to the commission. So back to number four. On 427.19.
Must be my lack of coffee, but I don't understand what the question is.
Yeah.
So if you look at 427.19, again, as Mike pointed out, where there are no changes written in that document, this has been here, I don't know how long it's been in the document, but we did not change any of the verbiage in that when we reviewed that.
This was a huge conversation and debate in 1998, I can tell you that.
Okay.
Because there was a department that was taking their academies out and actually putting them to work doing firefighting, and that turned into be a big deal. And it was a two-day meeting for this committee, which I was on at the time, and we spent a lot of time on this, and that became a rule based on that debate. I'm not sure I understand the question here, because it's already pretty much stated.
Well, once again, the person asking this question, we don't know who that is.
Right.
And we don't know what their point of reference is or what their actual concerns are, unless they are here or somebody wishes to interpret that in some form or fashion. But our due diligence is to at least look at it. We've read it. We looked at it. We're leaving the commission Commissioner, your committee is recommending we leave it as it is.
Leave it as is. We couldn't come up with anything about why, who.
Right.
Any reasoning.
Will anybody else on our committee see a concern of just leaving as it is?
I don't think so. As I'm kind of reading this, though, whoever the person is, I see the liability comment in there, and maybe they're worried about the liability of somebody getting hurt as a student while they're out. Well, I'm not saying I endorse it. I'm just saying that's what I suppose. So.
And I agree with you. I think what they're missing is we're not telling them they have to take their students right. to observe an active fire incident. We're just giving them that option. They just can't use them. They can't. They're kind of like the fire chief. They're high-paid spectators out there. And if they don't want to take them, they don't have to. We're not telling them they have to.
Okay, so we're leaving 427.19 as is.
As is. Yeah, okay. You good there?
Moving on to subchapter B, number one, it's 427.203.
One of the things that I've discussed and thought about, there are multiple 427s floating around from back to the original to at least three different versions that came out of that we've printed that have gone out to the committee and some stuff between 435 and 427. So we're really not sure what document the people that are asking this have actually, they may not even have the final, you know, document that was submitted to y'all. Back in whenever it was, in your last meeting, or even the commission meeting in October. So, once again, dealing with Pat and as far as I know, Chris, and talked to Rick a little bit about it, we're not sure what, who, whatever, but we feel like it's good to go.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I need to make a comment on the behalf of the agency here for 439.13A. So we're under subchapter C number 2 here, and specifically they're lining out what's in 439.13.
I'm not following where you are, Chief.
You're ahead of us.
Yeah, we're still.
No, it's listed on that page under subchapter C number 2, and this is found in 439.13.
We hadn't made it there yet.
I feel like I'm behind you, then.
No, you're ahead.
Keep up with where you're at. Where are you at?
We're on number one still.
Subchapter B.
Okay.
It's up. All right. It's at the top of the page in red, subchapter okay. B.
So we're good at leaving. We're good at.
Yeah, we're leaving.
One, we're going to leave as is and move now to Chief Wisco's.
Okay.
Comment.
Okay.
Great.
So we're all caught now up with Chief up. Wisco.
So number one is the happened. Same?
Yeah, we're going to leave number one as is.
But the requirements for the training on site is the same as?
Yes. In this latest version, they're all the same.
They are.
Yeah, and what we were doing, we were just trying to stop duplication of effort right there. So.
And
we do make sense.
Commissioner Hamilton's point, you said there's at least three versions of it. I've got four, and I know you guys. I know you guys have more.
I do.
So whoever this person is, that
we have no
raised
idea
a question. We don't
got.
Know what they were looking at.
Right.
So.
On any of the questions.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
We're good.
All right. So now we're moving into subchapter C, number two, which is.
This
where
is what Chief
Wisco
was. Chief Wisco was.
I'm sorry.
So now, if you reference that again, if we'll start over, we'll be on the same page.
Subchapter C, but it doesn't say where we're at in subchapter C.
No, it does not.
All right, so here's the comment I want to make, because what's highlighted down here in blue is talking about special accommodations. And I think we need to be very careful there. I will tell you that it is a common appeal to the agency about special accommodations. It happens around the state, and we deal with it on a regular basis. I won't say frequent, but a regular basis here. We heed the advice and direction of the AG's office when it comes to this, and there are specific requirements that we have to recognize. I would not feel comfortable making any changes outside of what is currently listed in any of our rules when it comes to special accommodations. So I'm just throwing that out as a caveat. If there's anything in here that they want to tweak a word or change this or change the way we allow accommodations, as the agency head, I'm going to speak against that because we could be challenging the law or what we're able to do here legally. And it's just something that we deal with way more than we should, and there are some very specific circumstances for accommodations. I don't want to start messing with the rules any that would put us in a situation that we can't recover from.
Yeah, certainly. Okay, so we've heard from staff and from Chief Wisco. Commissioner Hamilton, your committee kind of seemed like it's believed in the same thing, too, that it was fine as it was.
Yes, sir.
Okay, does anybody on our
committee? We address those accommodations and stuff in 439 in the bill on exams, and I don't know why that we need to change anything here.
Okay. So then moving into our committee, does anybody on the advisory committee have a concern or a question with what was being asked on number two here? So the suggestion is that we leave it as is?
Yes.
Anybody see any other reason to modify that or discuss it? Okay. We will move on from there. So item number three, which is 427.307D. The discussion was on guest instructors. The question that was being asked from Commissioner Jones is, are there any guidelines or limitations on guest instructors? Are there specific time frames? Could an entity have a guest the entire class? There are specific parameters on guest instructors, is what the statement was. So, Chief Wisco, has your staff had any concerns or questions or problems with guest instructors?
No, I don't even see any recommended changes in this section, but there's no issue. I mean, you can bring in a guest instructor, and I think it's just like with any training class, the lead instructor is the lead, and if he selects a guest instructor, they're entitled to do that. They're instructing under his tutelage, so I can't see a... There are no limitations other than they have to be on the has to be on the program. I mean, it has to be approved by the lead instructor, but I don't think we want to get into making any at this point.
Right. And I was at the meeting that Chief McAuliffe is referencing where the question came up, did the lead instructor have to be present when the guest instructor was there? And the answer was overwhelmingly no. That was not...
I'll defer to Rick. I don't think...
Yeah,
there's any limitations or any
issues
with this.
I think didn't we about 2 or 3 years ago look at this same issue with this committee?
We did.
Yeah, I think we
more than once.
Yeah, we've already been down in that.
Comes up pretty regularly.
We've been down that rabbit hole not too long ago.
You know, and we say this at every time this comes up, it gets said, but you don't want to make this so restrictive you can't bring in a subject matter expert to talk about something. You're trying to teach these folks something. It's okay to bring somebody in that has a little more knowledge than maybe the instructor cadre. And I think that's what this rule is trying to do. They're trying to give you that flexibility. I would hate to put some limitations in there.
I know our group probably, it hadn't been that many years ago, probably 2 or 3, that we addressed this same question and left it as is because of we didn't want to restrict it. So I think we've already kind of...
Okay. So once again, so Chief Wisco, staff is good with it the way it is. Your staff has not had a concern or question to revise this in any form or fashion. Commissioner, your committee also felt like the wording was appropriate.
And once again, we have no idea why, when, or where.
Well, having discussed this before, I know it's come up before. People do ask that question. But, yeah, so we're good as it is. Anybody on our committee see an issue or challenge leaving the work?
And so I'm reading this through this. I don't have an issue with this, but I think the timeframe is something that somewhere down the line we should probably address. Can you have a guest instructor for a whole year? Can you have a guest instructor for a whole class? That's probably...
Definition would be, what do you mean by the whole class? I mean, the whole course? Or the
yeah, the whole
subject?
Course, yeah.
Well, no, because it specifically says that the lead instructor needs to be at least an instructor, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, like I said, I'm not saying that I agree or disagree, but I can kind of see the concern, and I recall the two concerns were the time frame and the certification of the guest instructor, which we kind of said, no, well, they're an SME and whatever they're doing, but... Yeah, I mean, the question's legitimate. Could you have a guest instructor for an entire course?
Can I answer that, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please.
You can have a guest instructor the entire course, and one of the people that currently do it is during their municipal schools is TEKS. Practically everybody that sits in a physical class, I'm going to say the biggest majority of them, the instructors are guest instructors at TEKS. Everything that guest instructor does falls on that lead instructor and that course coordinator.
Still, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and it goes back to, you know, if we're teaching an accredited course, we've got to meet those accreditation requirements, just like what Mike's talking about for IFSAC as well. So we're trying to meet those Pro Board accreditation requirements, so that's... We will do that, but if we can't do it on with a guest instructor, we'll do it with the lead instructor. That's exactly right.
Well, and so the good thing is, I think now you've answered the question and, you know, rationally, and so now that it's out there, the question's been answered, so, and it's legitimate, so.
Okay, so our consensus is leave this one as is.
Absolutely. Yeah,
send it on to the commission.
Yeah, definitely leave it.
Okay. We're on to subchapter D. 427.407. So I'm assuming their question is under D, should or should the instructors not be evaluated?
Well, this isn't a change. This has been in existence since whenever.
The question really isn't should we or should we not. The question, the way I'm interpreting it, is does TCFP need to be involved in it?
Right. That's the way I read it. The question of whether we should know or not. I think it's as simple as if something comes up, if an injury or a fatality occurs, I think the instructor's credentials, which would include any evaluations, would be part of that. So I think the way the wording is in the current rule is acceptable. I don't think it's something, I'll tell you right now, I don't believe we walk in and ask for evaluations on instructors. We're not going to get in the weeds that much. I mean, this is an inspection of a training facility. Everybody's been through one. It's not an easy task. We're not going to make it any harder than we have to. But I think it's a requirement. It's just like going back to that discussion about the records earlier. You have to maintain them. We've gotten kind of specific here down to evaluations, but I think we already covered it in that 427.13C. All records have to be maintained.
And right.
So.
And really, the wording, the way I interpret it, just simply says available for review. That's all it says.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a regulatory concern on anybody's part. So,
I guess if there's an evaluation floating around that somebody doesn't want us to see, I guess there's a reason for concern. But I don't see a need for us to even see it unless there's a specific issue with a student during that instructor's time with them. I don't think, we're not going in looking, and I could be wrong, but again, I'll look to Cliff or Rick on this. I don't think we go in and look specifically for evaluations unless there's a complaint or a concern about something in particular.
So staff's good with us leaving it as it is?
We're actually good with this, yeah.
Okay.
From a client standpoint, we don't utilize this as a inspection tool. This would be a injury investigation, complaint investigation tool that we would use.
Well, Rick, I'll go back to what Chief McAuliffe sent in as far as the red that's on that document that states in there, but we are not necessarily of interest or benefit to the Texas Commission on Fire Protection. He refers back to their own particular CTO and be evaluating. As far as committee, we won't leave it like it is.
Okay, so your committee's saying leave it as it is?
Yes, sir.
Our committee, are we agreeing on the same?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll leave as is. And I believe that answers Commissioner Jones' concerns that had been emailed to him. So let's take a quick bathroom break to digest this. When we come back, I want to make sure that staff doesn't have any other concerns with looking at this document. Once again, Commissioner Hamilton will ask your committee if the rest of the wording in the document is appropriate to move on to the commission, and then I'll entertain any questions or concerns that we have from our committee. Are there any other emails that we're missing, Amanda, that somebody weighed in on?
Yes.
Okay. Let's take a brief bathroom break, and we'll resume here in 10 minutes. Okay, we'll go ahead and resume the Firefighter Advisory Committee meeting, December 7th. So,
can everyone please turn their microphones on?
Thank you, Grace. Make sure your mic is on. So, Chief Anger, you brought out a point there. If y'all would look back at your notes for just a second, we made a revision to 427.13, which is where we added in the wording electronically.
Yeah, we added the verbiage printed or electronic. And then I just want to offer for consideration under the distance provider, it mirrors in 427.213A. You have the same verbiage indicated for a distance provider, and I think that we need to put the same language back in that one as well. Training records, printed or electronic, in that particular statement as well, just to be consistent for on-site providers and for distance training providers.
So right after the word training records, we would make that insertion right there. And that's all new wording anyways, because that entire section is brand new.
That's correct.
Okay.
And we wanted that to mirror what we had for the on-site provider, so that's why it is where it is.
Yeah, appreciate that clarification. Otherwise, we'd have been coming back and having to revise that at a later date.
Yep.
Any concerns or questions from the advisory committee? Okay, so for everybody's understanding where we'll go next, so we have the entire 427 review here in front of us. We've just made some revisions to it. We at least revisited the sections that we've been asked to revisit, and we're good with it at this point, but we need to take a better look at it. So first of all, Chief Wisco, starting with you and staff, is there anything else that staff has seen that needs to be revised on the 427 document?
No, we're pretty content with what it says,
okay,
other than the things we've talked about this morning.
And I know we're charged with reviewing the 427 document, and today we have the benefit of actually having the 427 committee here.
Yes, sir.
Commissioner Hamilton, is the rest of this document clear?
With the verbiage that we've changed today and the recommendations that came back from y'all in y'all's meeting, we're good to go.
Okay.
So now it rests with us as the advisory committee to take a look at this document, make sure that we don't see anything else that needs to be revised or addressed before we send it on to the commission for final adoption. And Chief Wisco, this would be for final adoption in January, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So do we need a motion to open it up to discuss?
Oh, you're all right. When he read it,
it's open.
He read the whole thing.
Okay. So amongst our committee, the advisory committee, do we have any other concerns, comments, sections we need to revisit, reread, take a closer look at?
I'd like to look at 427.7, the protective clothing use, care, and maintenance section.
427.7. This is on subchapter A?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay, so we're protective clothing use, care, and maintenance? Correct?
Yes.
Okay. I have it. I don't know if everybody else has it yet. So what do you have, Jim?
So my only purpose here is to make sure that we meet at least the minimum standard for NFPA. I probably agree with that. By statute, we have to at least meet the minimum. We can go above it, but we can't go below it for the NFPA documents that we outlined in the statute. There are some places in here that, as I was looking through it, that seem to contradict the standard. And so I have, in an email, I provided some information to that effect in 427.7. And I would start out also with anywhere that we put somebody should establish a policy or an SOP in here, we should also put that they should comply with it. We've done that in other sections of the regulations and the standards. So just establishing a policy, we have run into that in the past where we have a policy, but we can't make the guys follow it. We've heard that before. So I would think anywhere we designate that they should create something like that, we should also ensure that the department complies with it or the entity complies with it. So that verbiage should be added in anywhere we have that. But in 427.7A, it talks about, let's see, I'll read it here. It talks about comply with NFPA 1851, blah, 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 and provide upon request a written SOP on the use, care, and maintenance to include the application of preliminary exposure reduction for the determination of appropriate level of cleaning. So in the standard, if we look in the standard, that's not what it says.
Do we have a copy of that to look at?
Well, we happen to have it. So I will hand these out with the caveat of I will collect these at the end of the meeting.
And shred them?
Yeah, you're good?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I probably should have that to follow along. Because... Thank you.
Thank you.
These are for discussion purposes only.
I got good. So these are ours to keep.
Nope.
And if anybody needs to confirm what's written or emailed, I actually have the document here, 21851. So.
Thanks. Thank you, sir.
So, Jim, if you could help us out, we know where we are on our 427 document. We're under 427.7A, and you are referencing what section of the 18?
427.7.1A.
Correct.
And so, in the NFPA 1851-2020 document, there are, and you'll see in your handout. Where was that? Is that in the back?
It starts with
flow charts in the and the information that you were provided.
There's some flow charts on the...
All right. Yeah, page two and page three. So. NFPA 1851 is a consensus standards document, so in writing, you would see in the document that the front half of the document is the mandatory items that are supposed to be followed. And the annex section are permissive items and explanatory items that are supposed to help the end user or the user comply with the front part of the standard when they can. So just to do that. So you'll see that everything that this document says for cleaning and decontamination, organizations shall use the decision tool provided in 7.1, 1.2, and figure 7.1.1.2b. That is these two flow charts. That is the basically the determining factor in what all the written material in there will basically refer to. 7.1.2.1 in the standard is the first part of it. Ensemble and ensemble elements shall be evaluated by the wearer or designated individual within the organization for preliminary application of preliminary exposure reduction, cleaning, disinfection, or sanitization after each use on the guidance provided in those flowcharts figure. In our document, we have the PER determines whether advanced cleaning needs to go forward, and so that's... It may just be semantics, but that's not what determines it. Whether you're exposed to the products of combustion or other items, as it states in the flowchart, is how it's determined, and then that dedicated, trained individual also assists in that process. But it's pretty clearly laid out. Ensemble and ensemble elements, 7.1.2.4. That are known.
Give me that number one more time.
7.1.2.4. It's just the next one. Ensemble elements that are known or suspected to be contaminated with bulk chemicals, asbestos, or other hazardous substances, body fluids, or other microbial contamination, or products of combustion from a structural or other fire, shall be subject to a preliminary exposure reduction, as specified in section 7.2. So. Preliminary exposure reduction. End users shall carry out preliminary exposure reduction immediately after exiting the emergency scene of any incident where their protective ensemble or ensemble elements could have become soiled or contaminated. So our PER process for the training academies should basically mirror this particular train of thought that... when they're exposed to the products of combustion, the PER should be applied. And so that is a little bit of the contradictory part of that. The PER does not determine the advanced cleaning. It's just part of that process. I don't know if you want to go one by one, or what do you want to do?
Well, I'm trying to, so we're at 427.7, number 1A. You said that paragraph there, which is new wording,
mm-hmm.
is not saying the same thing that NFPA 1851 is saying.
No.
And I'm just being honest, I'm confused as to where exactly... It's not.
Does it not? Is A of what he's showing? It says you have to have a policy that then would outline what NFPA says.
Should
do what?
Because this is a matrix on.
So in A it says preliminary exposure reduction. For the determination of appropriate level of cleaning and inspection of PPE, that's not how it works.
But that wouldn't that be in the SOP, and not in the rule?
Well, but they're going to follow this if they're going to follow the rule. It should the proper SOP, yes. But if they're following the rule, then their SOP might not be correct.
Well, that would be for those guys to check when they're doing the compliance.
But why wouldn't we do it? Why wouldn't we do it here first? Correct.
We're not going to write SOPs for fire departments.
No, no. I mean, why wouldn't we correct this language here? Is what I'm saying.
I think the rule is a guide, and we check for compliance based on what the SOP says that they provide us. So I think we're saying the same thing. I think we're hung up on the word determination, and okay. what we're saying is what NFPA says, and that's all. I believe we have the authority to do. We can't write their SOP form.
Well, right, but it, like I said, as a.
I agree with your comment. We probably need to add the word compliant there because we've done that for a number of them over the years. But I don't think we write the rule to match what we want their SOP to say. I think they need to write their SOP to meet their needs. And then
within
we determine if it meets.
But within the rules, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm okay with that. I'm just bringing it to the table.
Yeah.
So.
No, I just want to clarify. We can't. We'd be in front of the legislature over there if we start writing their SOPs for.
No, and that's not what I'm saying, but yeah. you have to use the, and we typically use the rules as guidelines in a lot of cases to write their SOPs, the minimums.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there, but I think we're doing it. I think we're giving them the tools they need to create an SOP.
And so the next one that I'm...
So before we go off, so yeah, on A, we're looking at adding complied in there then? Or comply?
Yeah, it should, and...
Where would we insert it?
To provide on request a written SOP and comply with it, including the application of...
I mean, it says that.
It does say comply in the first sentence.
Yeah, the right first sentence says you have to comply with 1851, period.
Right. And then?
It says that they have to prepare their own written standard operating procedure, or SOP. I would take that to mean it has to comply with 1851. But are you thinking it doesn't, Jim? Is that you're saying that they might have an SOP that doesn't comply with 1851?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that's on us to. Our compliance inspectors will identify that. I mean, that's what they're out there doing. The law requires that we can see these SOPs, and without getting down to specifics, this is one we pretty much request to see every time, just to make sure that.
That's what I was going to say. At least in our last audit, I know that we sent those SOPs, and that's one we sent for them to review mm-hmm. in advance of him coming out. But I don't know about everybody.
No, that's a good point that it has comply in the first one.
I'm
hoping they do. But
their checklist actually is broken down into sections now, and they go through mm-hmm. and check each section for compliance.
Bring that
up. It's not a.
Okay. No. Okay.
No.
I'm listening.
Trying to understand as well, but if you're all right with that,
I'm all right with that. That's I brought it for discussion. So. The next one is in two, the different buildings, I guess, or whatever you want to call it, just a little ways down, B2A. It just seems different for different places, and while I get the gas fired, even though we've had that discussion before, I get the gas fired ones, the acquired structure ones, they have to comply. But the normal cleaning for structures. The non-gas fired training center, I'm confused about what that building is. The exterior props are just basically gas fire props, so I get that. Everybody's using propane, or natural gas, Chris, for the most part?
Along those lines, yeah.
Yeah, and then the Class B fire. So my issue is that while yes, it says we got to comply with 1851 in here, these seem almost kind of like exceptions to what's in the standard. Firefighting ensemble for the non-gas fired training center buildings. Non-gas fired props must be assessed for contamination, products combustion. Okay, and then Preliminary exposure reduction should be done as soon as the training is completed for the day. Advanced cleaning and inspection should be done as soon as practically possible. Practically possible is not what the standard says. It says as soon as possible. Practically possible is for the PER. I'm sure it's just a grammatical error.
Where in that 1851 document can we refer to that?
In as far as soon as possible?
Versus practically possible. Yeah,
practically possible is in the annex for PER.
To help me out, I've got 40 pages here with no numbers on them.
As soon as possible following the event comes...
For the cleaning, advanced cleaning.
Advanced cleaning.
Yeah.
Are you reading a document?
Yeah, no, I'm reading the standard.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think we have what...
We don't have what you have.
We don't have that as a handout.
Well, it's not, do you not have...
You have the appendix. You have it all. You have everything that would be referenced.
Are they all numbered?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I'm asking for, a roadmap here. Help me out. Are we a number?
If it has an A in front of it, that's part of the appendix. That's where the exceptions come in. That's written by the committee.
On top of that?
No. No, we have nothing.
You have 7.1.3. This is in the standard, not the appendix.
7.1.3.5.2. Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Preliminary exposure reduction symbols and tumble elements shall be subject to advanced cleaning as specified in 7.3 as soon as possible following the event.
Yeah, that's what it says. So, like I said, I'm sure practically possible is just a grammatical error, but.
So you're comfortable with it just saying as soon as possible?
That's what it says in the standard, so.
Okay.
And that says that in the appendix?
The PER says as soon as practically possible. And it says that in the appendix. And it's an explanation. The advanced cleaning is as soon as possible. And that's in the main body of the standard.
Can I bring to light a couple of things here?
Yes, sir.
So you guys will go in your document to Appendix 7.3.3.
Give us a second.
I'm sorry, the pages aren't numbered.
That's advanced cleaning?
7.3.3, the advanced cleaning section. Go to paragraph 6. Starts off with it is recognized that it might not always be practical for organizations to remove soiled or contaminated ensemble elements from the service immediately following an incident. If you go down to the last sentence, it says it is important that the organizations implement advanced cleaning as soon as it is practically possible following any event where ensemble elements are soiled or contaminated. 1851 is a very interpretive document. It uses terms should, guide, and those to allow the latitude of the situation at hand and not hamper the emergency operations or the operations at a community at home. It's fairly obvious that training side was not considered in that. I had a conversation with a couple of folks from NFPA as well as the chair of the committee, and they both told me that really they did not take consideration into the training side of it. But in 1402, NFPA 1402 and NFPA 1403, they do have a single sentence statement that kind of addresses a little bit on the training side.
And
1403, since he... So once we get that, I'll guide you to the two of those.
And so to add into what Rick's saying, in the main body of the standard, in 7.1.3.5.2, following preliminary exposure reduction, ensemble and ensemble elements shall be subject to advanced cleaning as specified in section 7.3 as soon as possible following the event. So...
So in essence,
NFPA is contradicting themselves.
NFPA says either one. It's scattered both ways.
So the it says there are events, so an event like a snowstorm, you're not going to do the PER outside, do the advanced cleaning, or in a disaster, sometimes it's not. That's what the unforeseen events or events outside of your control is for. Listen, we could say, as long as it gets clean, that's really what matters. But I've already heard some interpretations off the cuff about what it means, like, so we're not going to clean for a week. We're not going to clean for however many days afterwards. We're not going to. And so that's my problem is not only do we have civilian cadets going through these academies, but we also have our members and brothers and sisters going through academies for extra training, incumbent training, PEAKS training, a lot of different kinds of training. And so we have to be cognizant that there's a reason that these things are supposed to get cleaned, not twice a year, but after every time it gets combusted. It's exposed to the products of combustion. So all I'm saying is we have the ability through this standard, even when we adopted it, to ensure that. It would be hard for me to justify that the training academies are going to do one thing when they burn Class A or fuels or whatever, and then the fire department's going to have to do something different. It doesn't set a good example either way. I get the logistic requirements and the restrictions and the amount of time, but there's already starting to be documented cases of lifetime instructors that are coming up with all kinds of crazy cancers at the end of their careers and their life. So we also owe it to the instructors to make sure that this stuff gets cleaned in a manner that at least mirrors what they're going to do on the fire ground if they go back to the fire ground. I've heard about all the clean fuels and all that stuff. You know, if I roll up in front of a wood frame house and it's just bare wood and it burns down, I got to clean my gear. If we go have clean pallets and hay in a burn building, then we don't have to clean our gear. I have trouble rationalizing that. I don't get that. So that's one of the prefaces, I guess, of the non-gas fire training buildings, what they do. So
I think basically the interpretation of the compliance, and this was told at one of the regional meetings, is that they equate a one training day equates similar to one incident. And so at the end of the training day, the recommendation was to have your gear, you go through an advanced cleaning after that training day, since it equates to what we refer to as an incident, because 1851 specifically doesn't say what a training day consists of. And I believe that was what I received at the regional meeting, was that one training day equates to an incident. So at the end of the training day, then your gear needs to be cleaned. Complying with the practical, or the as soon as possible, or the when it's practical.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I don't know. I'd like something a little more definitive, that's all, about when the stuff's going to get cleaned, rather than, because that interpretation could go all different directions based on different places.
But 1851 doesn't tell you that either. It leaves it up to interpretation itself.
What?
Well, I mean, it says as practical as possible, so it doesn't give you timelines either. Or
it says as soon as possible on the front end.
Well, in some sections. In some other sections, it's as practical as possible.
But, Jason, in the...
I don't think anybody... I think with all the knowledge that we're going through, I don't think anybody is here to say that we don't want clean gear.
Right.
And I would say that the our line guys, if their gear is not getting clean, that's on them. They should be bitching and whining to their people if it's not getting clean. And if it's not getting clean and it's not going through and their department isn't cleaning it, there's a mechanism to call these guys through the complaints.
But now we're dealing with a training facility. It's different than a department.
What you just said, we want to make sure they're doing
the same. Well, no, I want to make sure they're doing the same, yeah. I don't know. I just... don't know. That's just my opinion. I think that separating these out like this, I get it because there's different kinds, but, you know, if you're burning products of combustion, you should be cleaning just like we clean on the fire ground.
And I'll disagree with that.
And the Class B liquid fires, I had a couple of those, observed a couple of those lately, and they're kind of dirty, so I don't know what you guys do now, Chris, but I don't know. I just...
We're complying with the standard preliminary exposure reduction and then cleaning that gear as soon as we can.
Okay.
I guess one of the things we kept coming back to, especially on that, and we had conversations, several of us, with NFPA, and the lady that comes out of Boston or Raleigh, wherever she's from, and specifically asked the difference between training and actual structural. And here it does document that it is an emergency. The cleaning takes place after an emergency. She said 1851 doesn't even touch training in a roundabout way. That's not our intent. You know, that's up to your SOPs, that's up to your colleges, that's up to your... So that's not what we wrote 1851 for, was training facility. So that's the reason this document's pretty much the way that it is, because we're going to go by it, and we reference for you to go look at it and make change, you know, run your SOPs and the coordinates so that Rick and his guys will come in and certify that you are up to standards and everything's being done and gear's being cleaned and look at the records and all that, but actually putting a stamp on it that you will, by God, clean that gear after every rotation, we didn't feel that we had the authority to do that.
I think all we have the authority to do is make them comply with 1851, so.
Well, even 1851 people said it wasn't put out there for training.
Well, I think that's why it mentions other fires in there, so.
I don't know. Rick, on that 1403, we have that 1403. You said you'd go over that.
There was some discussion earlier. So if you have the page with you, if you look at that first page is the 1403, NFPA 1403. And we actually have a rule that says you're going to use this as a guide for live fire training. If you look at 4.9.2, which is the second one there, it talks about the safety officer shall ensure that all participants' PPE has been inspected in accordance with NFPA 1851 and 1852. Okay. It further goes on, talks about it, you got to follow 1971, which is the construction standard and all of that. That is all that it mentions in the live fire portion of it until you move to...
Oh,
the appendix portion on the second page, 4.9.2, it says guidance is provided in NFPA 1851 and 1852 to assist the instructor department determining if personal protective clothing and breathing apparatus is in serviceable condition. Okay. So 1851 is a document that says that they should have a policy and procedure in place and that they should follow. And here are the guidelines. It's TCFP's responsibility to ensure two things. Number one, in 435.1, which is the one that talks about PPE, it says that you're going to have a SOP that follows NFPA 1851, selection, care, and maintenance. It also says that you're supposed to have one for the use. Okay, so it's two separate SOPs that have been folded into one for most departments. We're absolutely fine with that. That's what gives us the authority to determine whether or not the department is following those guidelines of 1851. And they utilize as soon as possible and as practically possible. If you go to page number 1, 2, 3, 4... to the fifth page at the bottom, it talks about the 1402, which is another standard that has to do with training facilities and burn buildings. In 5.3, which is the first statement there, it specifically says that they have to, or they shall, okay, shall is a pretty big word for us, facilitate personal washdown after training exercises that expose personnel to products of combustion in accordance with the requirements of the AHJ. Now, we don't have a recommendation for following 1402, but most training facilities that I'm aware of do it from a risk management perspective. The breakdown of the different types of structures and the different types of fuels, I think the committee, at least from my understanding when we sat there, was they wanted to identify the different fuels that these folks are exposed to and also identify the need for that preliminary exposure reduction and the need for advanced cleaning as soon as practically possible. Now, just like with on the fire ground, you're going to have a guy that when you come out, he's going to make a decision. You're dirty. You got to go for a PER. Okay. PER, yep, you're filthy. You need advanced cleaning. They're going to get that gear advanced cleaned as soon as possible for that department. I think they're just wanting to break down the differentiation of the fuels to have for the understanding that each of the fuels have unique risks involved with them, and that those risks need to be addressed appropriately through the PER and the advanced cleaning as soon as possible.
Thanks, sir.
Chairman, can I throw something out here?
Yes, sir.
I spend a lot of time reading 419 and looking at what we're doing and making sure we're doing what we're supposed to do. When you read 419, I think Jim is absolutely right. The law says that a fire department has to adhere to the NFPA standards that are applicable, 1851 in this particular case. It says a fire department. Jim said a while ago, and I agree with him, that we can't do less than what the law says, but we can exceed it. And I think what everybody's missing here is that in 427, the document we're debating right now, we exceed the Texas state law when it comes to protective clothing because we are imposing the 1851 standard on training facilities. So NFPA has stated repeatedly that this is not written for training. This is written for firefighting. The state law says a fire department. So we're not differentiating between a fire department that's teaching their own class or a training facility. We're saying all training facilities are going to have an SOP, and they're going to live up to what 1851 says. 1851 is not clear in what it says. It gives you multiple options. They're all interpreted. At the end of the day, it all comes down to what's going on in the courtroom. But I'll tell you that I'll sit here as somebody who's been in this room, involved in this for 28 years. I think we're doing the damn best we can do, and we're actually imposing more than what the law gives us the authority to do by doing what we've done in 427. And I appreciate Jim's concerns, and I agree with what he's saying. I think we're already there. I think we're doing way more than what we can, and we're doing the best we can. And I hate to say this because I know we're the government, and I say all the time we're here to help. I think you got to trust us, and I think we have to trust the leadership of these training facilities and these fire departments that they really do want to do the right thing because they're the ones going to court at the end of the day. We're going to be sitting right there next to them, and I'll tell you right now, I feel comfortable in what we've got here. I think I would have to say we've exceeded what the law says. And so the semantics, the different interpretations, we can't help that. You're just going to have to trust us that we're imposing more than what we should, and we're getting away with it. And I think everybody in this room, everybody on this subcommittee, and even this committee are in agreement with what we have here, that it's important to the Texas Fire Service. I think we're making a difference. But I just think this entire last hour or so, while it's been important and necessary, and I think it's healthy, I think we're getting hung up on a couple of little words where we shouldn't be. I think we've got better things to worry about. I think we're doing a damn good job in the state of Texas. And I think this document is evidence of that because we do exceed what the law requires. And that's just my opinion as the head of the agency. I could be gone tomorrow, but I'm going to ask you to trust us.
Well, I don't think anybody distrusts us. And we're charged right now with reviewing this document and making sure the wording is
as best as can possibly be. And to the commission, ad hoc committee, the 427 committee that's put a lot of time into this, and having been in charge of a training facility for a number of years myself, I agree with your comments that I see us going above and beyond what 1851 really does specify when it comes to the training facilities.
And I don't think we're out of line. I don't think we're out of line at all for doing that. I think we're trying to raise the bar in the state of Texas.
No, and we're good on that. And to Jim's concern about raising it even higher possibly, you're trying to define some of this while also addressing some hypothetical scenarios that could play out. We'll never come to a resolution on how to plug all of those potentials, but having run a training facility, this is very clear to me what we need to do. And I keep going back to what you illustrated earlier, which that very first sentence says we comply with 1851. And 1851 doesn't even say that for training facilities, but we're mandating that. Everything else, and I don't see us defining acquired structures and gas-fired, non-fired, and exterior. I don't see that as exceptions to the rule. I see that as just help walking through with the training facilities that each of these type of environments are a little bit different from each other. But it's not a caveat for omitting the responsibility of 1851. To Jim's point, you know, the care of our brothers and sisters that are out there wearing this PPE.
I mean, I think this is all necessary, and that's exactly what we're all here to do. But I do think at the end of the day, I think we've raised the bar in Texas. And that's not to say next time something goes wrong, this doesn't all go to court and we don't raise it a little bit higher. But I think we're doing the best we can do right now with the tools, what we have in front of us.
Well, if we're following along with notes, at least where I'm at right now, I'm under C, non-gas-fired training center buildings. And, Jim, you pointed out the wording where the term practically was not in one section of 1851. But, Jason, you found another section where it actually says exactly that. So,
well, it's just it's in the appendix.
It's in the annex, yeah.
So is it
the main body doesn't have practically, it just says as soon as possible. The appendix has practical in there.
Well, and based on staff's weigh-in and the 427 committee weigh-in, you know, I'm fine with the way it is right now. I think we're arguing semantics. I hate to have a lengthy discussion over the word practically or as soon as possible.
I would go with either one because
it's a toss-up.
I think whether it's there or not, it's...
Well, it's not even clear in 1851, so why are we sweating over... whether it's right or not.
It's the same verbiage as in 1851. Depends on whether you're looking at the main body of the standard or the appendix of the standard. And the state has adopted 1851 as a totality. So they've adopted both the standard and the appendix.
Yeah, so maybe let's let it ride, but I still think that we need to have anywhere that they're going to create an SOP or an SOG that we need to have some verbiage in there that says that they'll also comply with.
Oh, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
I support that.
No, and I'll acquiesce to the rest of it. It's a good point that he made that, you know, technically we're probably going above what the statute is, so.
I feel confident, sir, from a compliance standpoint. This gives us, as a compliance group, the ability to do what is right.
Okay.
From an enforcement standpoint, it gives us that ability to do our job and do what's
good.
Right.
Yeah, and by the way, just for everybody's FYI, my name's in this book, so I sit on this committee.
I think it's valuable that we have you here. I just think that we're chasing our tail because...
That's fine. No, I'm good with that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
As far as the committee chair for the 427, the members that are present, the members that may be listening online, or they'll be able to come back and visit with this, we have given enough time to get more information from the stakeholders, and we've gone through and answered questions that were given to us. 427 is ready to be put to bed. If you decide to vote on it, it will go to the commission for a full voting on in January as an approval. We're done taking questions.
Well, that's what our committee's charged with right now is to do that, but I want to make sure we have everybody on our committee's ability to have a voice.
The committee is ready for that to be done, sir.
Well, that's what we'll determine here in just a second if we can. So I agree with you. I appreciate your committee's work and you guys formalizing it as it is right now. We're just trying to dot that last I and get on to the goal line here. So is there any other sections of this document that anybody has a concern about or that we need to revisit or look at? Is there anything else, Jim, that you had?
No, thank you.
And nowhere thanks, else in the document at
thanks
all?
Thanks to the people that came on the day.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
With all that being said, then I'd like to make a motion to accept 427 as presented today with the changes that we made from the email from Commissioner Jones. And then the added note from Chris about that other section as far as...
Yeah, 213.
213.
Or 311, which I think it was 213.
It was 213.
And then with Mr. Reedy's section in there that the compliance of the SOPs.
Do we need to go through and identify each place that says create an SOG or SOP and identify each one? Can we do that globally?
I'll leave that up to Chief Wisco.
And I'll second that motion.
I think as we, in most places it's already there, but I think as we move through this, we'll try to do a better job, but it's going to take a lot of us. I mean, everybody knows these rules, and sometimes we can miss it. We missed stuff earlier that we had to come back and catch. I think we'll make a heartfelt, sincere effort to catch that every time, but if we miss one, somebody needs to call us on it because I think it does need to be in there.
Okay.
And I've agreed with that for 5 or 6 years now that we've been doing it. So.
Well, and that would just be a grammatical... whatever correction.
Yeah, it's a
final adoption.
It's a pretty
anyway.
Simple thing, and that's something that can be pointed out right as they're voting on it at the commission meeting, and we can make those changes without a lot of hoopla.
So do we need to put that wording in there now, though?
Well, I guess it sounded like it was on.
That was in my motion.
That's in your motion.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And it was seconded by.
So I guess my question is on the change that you just mentioned, the last one with the comply, what are we changing there? Because I thought we determined that the...
I agree with you. I'm confused as to where we're inserting that word. I thought we had discussed that and then decided that the very first sentence says comply.
It's not just there. It's throughout anywhere that references the SOP in this, in 427.
So let's use an example of one of them, just so at least Amanda has an idea of where we're inserting that word. Is it the word comply or compliance? So help me out. So just show me where on the very first one that we would make that grammatical change.
Well, in 427.7 under A, it says comply with NFPA 1851.
Yeah, that's where I thought we were leaving it.
Yeah, it is. All that was.
Yeah, that one's good.
That's the way it is.
What with that addition, it's just if there's anywhere else in 427 subsection A, B, C, or D that's not in there that we pick those up. It's just like Chief Wisco said.
Well, you're assuming that it's not in there.
Assuming that they may have missed one somewhere in there, yes.
I just quickly looked at subchapter B, and the exact same wording is in B when it talks about 1851 compliance, and it is not anywhere in C or D. It's not even referenced in there. So I think we've covered it, but I think duly noted in the motion. We'll go back through here, and I'll spend more than 30 seconds skimming through it to make sure we've caught every place in 427 where it should say that.
Okay, so we don't need to do that right now?
If I'm going to be submitting this for publication at some point, I would prefer that y'all do so that it's not left up to me. This is the committee's decision.
I
one of, Chris, in some of it, when it says it in the very first section of it, it follows. You don't have to put it in there every single time. It says it in the first deal, and then it follows through the rest of the document.
A and B covers that.
Yeah, A and B cover that.
A and B covers that, and then deal in part two covers that.
Yeah.
Which covers, which is all under that.
So we've got that in 427.7.
Seven, it should be in wherever SCBA starts. Should be in there too.
It says shall comply on that one, Joe, on 427.9.1. All self-contained breathing apparatus that will be used during the course of instruction for commission-approved fire protection personnel shall comply.
And that might be the only two places, right? And then you have to go back down to facilities again, or apparatus again. See anything for apparatus? In subchapter B, too.
Front end, Jim.
It said, that other one said the same thing, so that's, it looks like it might end be in here.
Anything else, Chris?
I didn't find
no. I'm in subchapter C right now. I'm just trying to make sure.
That's did a word search in the C.
I think the only place it would be protective equipment. SCBA.
It's in there. And we tried to mirror those. That's the reason we got all the strike throughs in the distance training provided. We tried to make all of that read exactly like it did in the
looks
on-site
good.
Training
so it looks
provider.
Like
so
like
it should be very consistent because it was a copy and paste.
Looks good.
Well, I'll amend my motion then to remove the comply with since it they appear to all to be in 427. So
could you just restate the motion so we have it?
Well, then I'll make a motion to approve 427 as submitted with the changes that we made from the email from Commissioner Jones with the printed and electronic, and then also this other noted location that Chris had pointed out.
Just to be clear, the two changes are in 427.13A and then 427.213A.
Was that the second one?
Yes.
That sounds correct.
That sounds correct.
Okay, so I have a new motion then?
Yes.
Second.
And Jim is seconding. Do I have any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? So moved. Commissioner, I guess we're done with the 427, we'll forward this on to the commissioners for their January meeting.
Thanks, sir.
For final adoption.
We appreciate all
appreciate y'all taking time out of your day
to
come here to our meeting and all the reference work that you've done to help clarify it for us. And hopefully we can get this one checked off and move on.
Thank you, sir.
We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's take a quick 5-minute break and then we'll try to hopefully finish up before lunch here. So take a 5-minute break.
Microphones. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
Can everybody
set
your copy of
the.
Appreciate
you,
sir. Thank you. Good deal.
Would you want those
separated? I don't plan to stop. Well.
Please appreciate you being our police on this thing.
Somebody always forgets.
Okay, we're going to resume.
Let's call it.
Item number four, rule review for the following: A, 37 TAC, Chapter 449, Head of Fire Department.
Okay, so this is another one of the rule reviews that we've been charged with by the commission, to take a look at this and see if anything needs to be updated or revised, rewritten. Amanda, do we have any comments from anybody at all?
No, sir.
Okay, is there anybody in the room attending that has come to the meeting with a voice on Chapter 449? Okay, if everybody would just take a brief second, make sure your notes are good, see if there's anything that you thought needed to be updated or revised.
Chief, would this be an area where they would input a prerequisite for this? To give an example, the head of the suppression needs to have all the NIMS. One, I'd want to say one through 800. They must have completed those before they get this certification. Would that be part of this section, or what, is it stated somewhere else that that's a requirement for that head of department to have had or have completed that? What NIMS 100 through 800?
I don't know. That sounds like a compliance question.
I'm looking. Yes, it's in a different section, but I'm sorry. Okay. I can't quote it, but it is in a different section where it outlines the specific things that they have to satisfy before they receive that certification.
Okay, because I couldn't find that. That's what I'm
Cliff and I are looking. Hang on.
Yes, sir.
So while he's doing that, Chief Wiska, I got a couple of questions. So there are some revisions in this document already that's being presented to us. Are these notations that staff has seen that need to be revised to update the document grammatically?
No, to be quite honest with you, I think this is a copy that got put in without those last changes being cleaned up to just appear as part of the rule. So I think what... like the emphasize 1, 2, 3, and 4 and the or and the cross through down there that you're seeing on the first page.
Right.
Those were previous changes. And when this copy was put in our certification book that's in our folder that we refer to, it just didn't get cleaned up.
Okay.
No, nobody has commented on this yet. We took it to the commission. I don't even know where we're at. This is December. So in October, we took it to them as the next rule to be reviewed, and this is the document that was there.
Actually, 449, wasn't that one that they sent back?
No.
No.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
If I can answer Mr. Vince's question. So 449.3, which is the minimum standards for head of department or head of suppression fire department, number 5, document completion of the National Incident Management System courses 100, 200, 300, 400, 700, and 800. So that's in
449.3. Okay.
And it's not up for review. So I'm just letting you know that it is stated that they have to complete it.
Okay. And Chief Wiska, I know this particular requirement, this chapter, is not that old. I remember us creating it several years ago when we started. Has there been any consternation or challenges or concerns at all from staff on how
I've slept since then, but I'm being told this had been reviewed already by you all in June, and the commissioner said in October to send it back, but I have no notes.
It may
or
have been September when y'all reviewed
it. I don't recall the reason they were sending it back to us.
I don't either. And
if I recall properly, they didn't give a reason other than they just wanted y'all to review it again.
This was in the October meeting?
I'm pretty sure.
I don't remember them sending them back in October.
I would have to go back through. I don't have it with me.
Yeah, I don't remember that either.
Hold on, let me look at something.
Mine's not in here either. 449.3.
Well, they said that part wasn't up for review.
Well, but If the head of department's up for review, why wouldn't the whole section be?
The whole section should be in there.
In here.
This is the first time you're seeing 449.
That's what I was going to say. I have no recollection of looking.
Based on the October agenda that was brought to them as a initial proposal for review. So it has not been sent back to you. This is here at you for the first time. There have been no comments. There are no concerns about this. And I can't tell you why it's incomplete.
Okay.
I think we got the wrong copy. But if you'll give us, if you want to go to the next one and let me go print out the,
sure,
the current rule and bring it back in here for everybody, we'll have it.
Okay.
Okay. So we'll leave this one open. We'll just table it for a second, and we'll move on.
Next item, rule review for the following B37 PAC Chapter 451 fire officer.
So this is also the first time this is coming through us to review.
I read through it the other night, and I didn't see anything that jumped out at me.
I guess I did. I just thought I'd take an opportunity with this. I had made a notation out of curiosity. Of course, they're all gone now, so staff. I had a question why this does not apply to fire inspection.
Inspection.
Fire prevention. Why there is not a parallel program for fire prevention officers.
There head of fire prevention?
It was a head of prevention only, but we're talking about fire officers. So a fire officer 1, 2, 3, 4, you have to be a structural firefighter to pursue right. that. In my department, and I'm sure Houston's the same way, they have a prevention division, but there's no process for them to go through a fire officer 1, 2, 3, 4. And fire officer 1 and 2 is primarily, you know, supervisory level knowledge. And while it wouldn't be the same as being a lieutenant or a captain on an engine or a ladder truck, there should be some sort of parallel program. And I'm just curious as to why there's not, or why it's not acceptable to take fire officer 1 and 2 as a prevention officer only. Did you have an answer, Candace?
If you look at the Texas Administration Code for fire officer, it states in there that you have to be structurally certified. That is the pathway. And that's pretty much where it states it is. You know, in Officer 1, it says one of the minimum qualifications is structural firefighting or, you know, that jargon. That is in most of our stuff.
Yeah, and I'm aware of that, but the large departments in the state,
would
a fire marshal's office or a fire prevention office. So I have lieutenants, captains, section chiefs, deputy chiefs, assistant chiefs that are over that division that supervise hundreds of people.
When will these be available?
And there is no educational program available for them to learn how to be an officer in fire prevention.
It has not. Technically, when it comes to the fire marshals, the new curriculum that will be presented to the commission is and has been laid out as their career path progression. It will start out at the basic level and then they go to intermediate, advanced, and master level. They have laid it out that way if it's approved by the commission in January. And within that, due to the NFPA code and IPSEC, it does have the administration in there where they have to review chief officer. And it's almost as rigorous as, or it is as rigorous as Officer 3. It has 4 skills in it that are all project-based. It's going to be a 120-hour course, because it has so much administration in it, and it lumps in investigator, inspector, and fire life safety educator. but as far as head of department, you would have to go back and change the rule to officers.
I was just throwing it out there, wondering if there was a day we ever should visit that, or who, where the genesis of that would come out of, the curriculum and testing committee or the advisory committee?
It's questioned by the fire marshals.
Yeah, but the fire marshals, they tend to stick more with, well, they do both, right? Prevention and investigation?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do. I
believe everybody on our committee has been at least through Fire Officer 1 and 2, where you're talking about supervising people and handling complaints and grievances and disciplinary procedures and understanding human dynamics and group behaviors. Why? So we all found that was valuable to our careers to right. do that, but we also work with and are responsible for the fire prevention group, but we don't provide that for them at all.
No. So investigator, inspector, or you do not have to have a structural background or be structurally certified to get those certs. And that's their career path, investigator, inspector, and those are usually the people that turn into your fire marshals. And a majority of them are, percentage-wise, are more T-close certified than they are structurally certified.
Provided they've gone through the fire and arson investigation.
Mm-hmm.
But for just fire inspection divisions, that would not exist. They're not members of T-Club.
But most of your guys are dual wielding. They are investigator and inspectors because that's just, you wear a lot of hats.
Well, large departments, they're not.
Yeah. Antonio, like in Houston, is there a lieutenant and a captain and a section chief in the Fire Prevention Bureau?
So our fire prevention, the way I understand it, is that we have to go through structured fire, you promote into that division.
Oh, your department does it that
yes,
way?
Yes, sir.
Okay, ours does
so
not.
So ours, we continue, they hold the structured fire, which is, our inspectors can take Fire Officer 1 because obviously they keep their fire right. structure. They don't have a career path that way, so that's what we talked about before.
Yeah, if we look at like Deer Park, Seabrook, the kind of middle, I guess, size departments, you know, Buddy Rice's department, where Yvonne Clark is out in ESDs, they are one-man shows. They do the investigations and the inspections, and, you know, if they're doing those investigations, when it comes to a fatality, a majority of them are T-close certified, so they can do all of it.
449.3, whole section missing.
So I was thinking it was just the larger departments, but obviously Houston isn't that way. I don't know. How does San Antonio do it, Jim? Can you hire on as just a fire inspector?
No.
You have to be a firefighter first?
It's a promotion.
Okay, so maybe Dallas is the anomaly then, and that's why we have our problem. Okay. I was just curious as to how we're not able to get our folks through a Fire Officer 1 and 2. I know you have to be structurally firefighter certified first, but the reality is that program, Fire Officer 1 and 2, is not specific to firefighters. Okay, I just threw it out there for discussion. So y'all answer my question.
But that affects your county fire marshals too, because a lot of those are not structural certified, and some of them are pretty large departments. I mean, they have 10 or 15 people with those ranks in them.
When you look at Yvonne Clark down in Harris County,
right.
DSD, she's not structurally certified.
Now, how many people does she probably supervise?
Oh, Lordy. Well, you got Lori, and then I think it's Lori, somebody else, and then her. So she's got at least 5, maybe 7 people under her.
So that would be comparable to a lieutenant or a captain's responsibility. Right. I don't know. It just seems like an untapped resource somewhere. Somebody should address somewhere down the road.
It would be interesting to see what the new fire marshal's curriculum out.
Yeah.
Out.
Thank you. Perhaps they'll address it.
Yeah. See what.
I wonder. Maybe it just never came up, but why couldn't you?
Thank you, Cliff.
Why couldn't you have that for these fire marshals? Allow them to,
I've heard that question before.
That's why I'm throwing it out there. That's,
I mean, but why not? There's nothing in that structure training that would prepare them to be an officer that I know of, and just getting their structure. You know what I'm saying? Because we're saying that's a prerequisite, that they've got their structure. but I don't know of any training in there that would prepare them to be an officer that they would, don't get out of Fire Officer One class.
Right.
You know, so I don't know why it would be a requirement. It makes sense to me. Exactly what you're saying.
Well, I think the...
Maybe they were trying to achieve something different by making you be structural, you know.
Well...
I would almost throw it to our resident historian over there.
Well...
Chief Wisco.
The historian and I sat through those discussions, and it was because we wanted whoever it was to have at least a working knowledge of the job that we do, regardless of whether you were inspecting or investigating a fire or whatever. Some kind of working knowledge of it, rather than just straight off the street.
But if somebody's straight off the streets, and of course we're not really talking about straight off the streets, if somebody from a county fire marshal's office or the Dallas Fire Department Inspection Division, somebody's getting ready to now supervise a group of folks,
okay,
similar to a fire station, why Fire Officer 1 and 2 is really an introductory into supervising people. It's not a educational program on how to pull ceiling or the best way to force entry or fire tactics and dynamics.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
So if to your point, somebody off the street, or to my point, a fire inspector who's certified by the Texas Commission on Fire Protection attended a Fire Officer 1 program and got that designation, what loophole or door are we opening up that we don't want open? Why would that be a problem?
Would it be easier to just say, add a section in there that says, or hold a fire marshal certification through DCFD? Because again, that curriculum is just as rigorous as Officer 3 is. With the amount of administrator, you have to pull data, you have to talk to HR about retention, talk to HR about retirees, talk to HR about new budget in personnel. So, I mean, if you're pulling all that data, doing all that research, it talks about doing evaluations and continuing education and meeting with people. I mean, it's strenuous and very, very, very big curriculum.
So, Cliff, and this is probably geared towards you just real quick. So we do have a lot of folks who are just fire inspectors and no other designation.
Correct.
And they're allowed to be fire investigators. And they can become fire instructors. Correct?
Correct. You can actually hold fire instructor by itself. You just have to prove the 3 years of service time.
Right. And that does not cause any undue harm or concern to anybody. So why could an inspector or an investigator or both not attend a Fire Officer 1 class? Why do we prohibit them? You can be only Marine certified. That's all you have to have, and you can take Fire Officer 1. Or you can have our certification. You can take Fire Officer. But for some reason, we don't acknowledge...
Fire inspector or fire investigator.
I'm just curious, is if we put that in there, is that against the law? Is it against the rules? Or is there a rationalization that we wouldn't want to do that? Because I think this would be the opportunity to throw that in there.
That's
or throw it to the commission
my,
and have them create another ad hoc committee and look at it. I'm just throwing it out there for discussion. Y'all can vote me down on it, but I'm just...
So you can go through Instructor 1 without being
structural.
Structural.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that? Okay. Because in this, you have to hold up. Yeah. You have to be an Instructor 1 to do it.
Uh-huh.
So my department's the anomaly, but it's probably the same as the county fire marshal's
office. It's the county.
They're certified as fire inspectors. They're certified as fire investigators. Some of them are even arson investigators. Right. Maybe not. Maybe they're just, let's just say they're just basic... fire prevention officers, and they've been through Instructor 1, 2, and 3. But when they go to take the Fire Officer 1 class to learn how to supervise people, we slam that door and say, you cannot take that class. And I'm just, I guess I'm,
I know the reason why is because we've done it that way forever, but I don't think that that's what we want to do today. So I'm just throwing it out there. Is that worth revisiting based on y'all's opinions? Because this would be the time for us to throw that in there.
Are you saying basically to add on 451.3 behind aircraft, marine, fire inspector?
And investigator,
and then wherever, in other words, possessive valid documentation as firefighter 2 and fire officer. So you're basically saying to add that fire inspector, fire investigator, arson investigator to that section?
I would. I'm throwing that out there, but I don't know. Are we opening up a door that we're going to come back around later on and say, okay, that's going to give somebody a back door to go get certification to go jump somewhere else? I don't see that, but that's what I'm asking. I personally, I think this would be the time for us to throw that rock
in the pond
and let those waves play out. When it gets to the commission, you know, some folks can start weighing in on it. We have a little bit more time to look at it. The worst thing they can do is throw it back to us again to revise it, which we just got done doing that, so that's not a problem.
I've had some fire marshals, some county fire marshals, ask why they couldn't take this, or what.
The fire officer one?
Yes. And I couldn't give them an explanation.
Yeah, I don't have an explanation for it either. That's why I'm asking. I've
been asked that question.
A glaring error.
I don't see, is there any, as we go through, that's a change like what you said in one there.
Well, maybe if you look at the very first paragraph underneath 451.1, it gives a definition right there, and that whole definition pretty much says it could be anybody that's in the fire service.
Right.
It does.
Is there anything else in there we would have to change?
You know, by the way this, and again, that's purely speculation the way it was written, but, you know, we start off with those three requirements, and then we go that they have to have their instructor one. It's almost like this was to make sure that someone doesn't try to get their fire officer without having several years of service and their instructor. I'm thinking that it was just a miss, you know what I mean? And it probably, at the time, wasn't something that anybody talked about. But I don't see where they were trying to keep an arson investigator or an inspector from getting their fire officer 1, 2, or 3, because again, they've completed an extensive course. You know, they're probably leading a department. It would make 100% sense to me.
I want to say when all this was created, it was, for lack of a better term, not an issue, the arson guys and that. We were just trying to get something for the firefighters to have that level up and also that extra education. So.
Yeah, no one's wanting to take away from that. I'm just wondering if we allow inspectors, investigators, and I guess you could even throw in public safety educators. That's another certification, right?
Fire and life safety educator 1 and 2.
Include those in.
But again, guys, y'all can clear all that up by just waiting and see if the commission passes. Fire marshal, which has all three. They have to have all three.
There you go.
Inspector, fire, life safety educator.
But they still don't.
That could.
They still can't be fire. I mean, not can't be, but they can't get their fire officer 1, 2, or 3 if they take that career path.
If they get a fire marshal certification, and that's what y'all make as the, instead of listing out investigator, inspector, fire life safety educator, if you just put fire marshal, TCFP fire marshal cert, then they can move into officer 1.
But are they not past the? They could potentially be past. Way up in the organization,
right.
And past that first line supervisor, which Fire Officer 1 addresses.
Yep, they've already.
Really want
and you want them to get that as they go up.
Sure.
So I think we go back to your comment to adding in inspector and investigator in that.
Well, I mean, we can do it, right? We can add that verbiage in here right now and run it up the flagpole.
Chief Wisco here is.
You can.
He's grieved.
I don't agree. I think you're tying in all the voluntary certs to the required certs. I think this was kept very simple for a reason. To be a firefighter, you either have to be a structural firefighter, a marine firefighter, or an ARFF firefighter, period. This was written, as what Reedy said a while ago, when it was written for the fire service at the time. Over the years, we have added all these caveats to help people further their education and make more money in incentive pays and things like that with investigator, arson investigator, fire educator, instructor, all of that. We don't have higher levels for those just because they're just voluntary extra certifications to help people develop professionally. Fire officer 1, 2, 3, and 4 are development tools, all right? I don't think we want to get in the weeds with our rules and start saying any of those development tools can be used to get another development tool. I think the
Is fire inspector a voluntary certification?
Fire inspector is not required in a fire department. If they're doing inspections, if that's all they do, yes, they have to be an inspector. But how they set up their organization, that's up to them. If we want to have another fire inspector supervisor type certification, somebody needs to bring it forward and everybody will take it under advisement. But this was written back in the 90s for a firefighter, for a line firefighter to go to the next level and to start blending out hazmat tech. Are we going to specify a hazmat tech could be a fire officer? He's not a firefighter, he's a hazmat tech. I mean, you got to be careful how you get into that. So I think it would take a lot more discussion than a 10-minute discussion sitting in here as we're moving through this. I mean, I'm not opposed to what you're saying. I don't think you want to rocket it up like that right now without doing a bunch of research on exactly what you're trying to accomplish.
Is it worth bringing to the commission to have them look at it?
Sure. I mean, what's it going to hurt to bring it up and have a bigger conversation?
But. Well, and I don't want to sound like I'm talking about my organization, because to Jason's point, we know that there's county fire marshals organizations, mm-hmm. and there are larger organizations that are just fire inspectors, mm-hmm. that we're responsible for providing their education and their certification.
Mm-hmm.
In my particular scenario, it's a several hundred member division, where we have the ranks of lieutenant, captain, section chief, and they are.
How did they get to that division?
They hired on as a fire inspector.
They hired on as a fire inspector, so they're not civil service firefighters.
Correct.
They worked at Stop and Go, and they went to school, and now they're fire inspectors, period. They can't leave there and go to suppression.
Correct.
It's a whole other track. I mean, I think if you want to have the conversation of opening up those other tracks, that's just like everything else we do. But I think this rule was written for the firefighter. And over the years, we have evolved and we encompass all this other stuff for professional development. And we very quickly get confused all the time on what's required and what's not required. We only require 7 certifications out there. All these others are, if you want them, come get them. And this is one of those, if you want them, come get them. So, I think we need to put a lot. I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm thinking there needs to be a lot of thought and discussion put into this before we just change the rule and say this is what we want to do. I think there's repercussions of that we're not ready for. The agency's not ready for it. The commission's not ready for it. The rules aren't ready for it. So I think this would be a very in-depth look at where do we want to go now. And that's why we do rule reviews. But does the rule serve the purpose it's here for right now? Yes, it's for a structural firefighter or an ARFF firefighter or a marine firefighter to get a certification as a fire officer. And if you look at the curriculum, it has nothing to do with being a fire officer. It has everything to do with teaching a class. Mm-hmm. It's an instructor class. It's an instructor certification, really. Having sat through 1 and 2, it was a waste of my time, but I checked the boxes. It didn't do anything to help me as a fire officer. It didn't help me in managing people. It didn't help me in making tactical decisions. It showed me how to build a PowerPoint and teach a class. So I think it serves a purpose, but I don't think we want to just make a blanket today. You hold anything, you can take this class. I think we need to stop and take a look at that. That's all I'm saying. We need to be careful about that.
So I think there's a gap there, though.
Huge gap.
So let's say I became passionate enough to say, let's look at this and how do we move this forward.
I think you go back to the commissioners and say we'd like to explore why this is limited to that.
Okay.
Because I don't think that's something anybody sitting in this room can make a decision on today. I don't think we have all the information.
I agree.
And I don't think we have the subject matter experts, if you will, in here. We would all profess to be, but I don't think you look around the room. I don't think we have everything we really would want to have before we made a decision like that.
All
because we learn time and time again, all of our rules are far-reaching. One rule change here, one word change in this rule could reach into five other rules that we hadn't even thought about yet.
Well, I think you were out of the room. That's how I prefaced this. I said my question was...
Yeah, it took me a minute to catch up with where y'all were even at and what we were doing. And once I figured it out, I just wanted... I don't think you're wrong in the conversation you're having, but I don't think we fix it today. I think it...
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, can I say something too?
Sure.
And since you're looking at this rule, and Chief Wisco expanded it, said it, it's going to be broad-reaching. Because you don't want to make a rule that is exclusionary. Right now, the way that rule was written, when it was written back in the 90s, is exclusionary. And the reason I say that is in that rule, the way it is correctly, or the way it's written right now, the only people that are eligible for an IFSAC seal for a fire officer one is a structural firefighter. Structural firefighters are the only ones that get IFSAC seals for fire or for firefighter two and instructor one. Marine firefighting personnel don't have a firefighter two IFSAC seal if they choose to get it. Neither does an R firefighter. So they're excluded from that IFSAC seal right off the bat. So there's going to be a broader range of just making a blanket statement, letting inspectors and investigators obtain the fire officer one certification. And I know you guys understand that. I'm just saying it's a far broader reach because, like I said, that rule needs to be reviewed very heavily because right now it is exclusionary.
Mr. Chairman, I think I need to clarify a question I answered for you about 5 minutes ago about inspector voluntary. If that is what you are being assigned to do, if that is the duties you're being assigned to do specifically, you have to hold inspector. But if you're a firefighter and they want you to do inspections, that's fine. You're still assigned to fire suppression duties. All right, that inspector certification is in addition to that. So in the situation in Dallas, I ask how you get there. If you can hire a civilian right off the street to come in your prevention office, yes, they have to be an inspector. But fire officer, if you look at this wouldn't benefit them in any way at all. I mean, this is designed for somebody holding structural or marine or art. So I think we would have to revamp the curriculum as well before we could just encompass other areas like that. I think where they're headed with the fire marshal certification is the vehicle trying to correct some of this because they're trying to create that. The argument when they said we want a fire marshal cert is, yeah, you can be a head of department prevention only, but you don't have everything. You're not really getting recognized for everything else you got. But if you have a fire marshal cert, now it's getting kind of restrictive. And even that subcommittee was cautioned, don't make this so hard somebody can't get it past the grandfather period. I think they're still working through that right now. So, I mean, it's certainly something to throw out there and have a conversation about and maybe even explore, but I don't think tweaking a couple words in this rule right now today would do us any good. I think it would take us the wrong direction.
Okay.
Why don't we wait till the other one to see how it goes through?
So that's kind of what I was looking at.
Yeah.
They may already be working on something.
Yeah, that's not a problem. I just threw it out there for discussion.
I think it's a good discussion, but I'd like to see what the fire marshal's curriculum has and how it kind of grows a little bit because it may answer that same question.
And I think to your point, to your credit, we got to look at these and see how do we make it better. Yeah, we've been doing it this way for 30 years, but how do we make it better? But I don't think it stops with just changing a couple words in here and we run. I think we got to look at all of it. And that's where it gets deep.
Chief Pierre, I mean, that's basically the way he prefaced it. I mean, should we throw some stuff in here to get the ball rolling, or how do we get the ball rolling?
I'd be careful with throwing it in here. I think you can have a conversation, but if you change the rule, that could have some impacts that we're not considering sitting here.
Okay, so back to the point at hand, we're looking at 451, and Chief Wisco did give us this most current handout of the entire rule.
449. I gave you 449.
I'm sorry. Well, we moved on to 451, though, right now.
Yeah.
So as long as we're there, let's finish 451.
Yes, sir.
Did anybody see anything that was a concern? Or needs to be revised?
I did not.
I didn't either.
If everybody's good with it, I'll make a motion that we approve.
Okay, I have a motion to approve as is.
Seconded.
Antonio seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so 451 we're done with.
Yes, sir. So we'll go back and look at A, 37 TAC, Chapter 449, Head of Fire Department.
And I think what happened is that when the pages were going through the printer, page two got stuck to page one, and it just didn't print out for everybody. That's how you didn't have 449.3.
Okay.
Did you see where they're on there?
Yes, sir. No, I do. And that is the right ones, 1, 2, 3, yeah. 4, 7, and 8.
Fun classes.
Yeah. Now, I mean, and I think it, but they're changing some of those, though, too, aren't they? Like, one of them is maybe B800, 700. I can't recall, guys. I can pull them up and look, but I mean, like it isn't straight 700 anymore. I think they've changed those a little bit. And I don't know, you know, like I said, probably with this just saying that you meet that obviously you do. But I guess if we started changing it, though, that would mess us up, because if somebody had the old one, so probably as it's written, it's probably good. I'm sorry, I'm rambling.
And then applicable chapter will be chapter 12, I believe it's.
Where are you on that?
On 449.3, where it sits there, complete the standard review assignment and the applicable chapter. I think the applicable chapter for head of department is chapter 12 in the curriculum manual.
So you want to insert that number in there?
It could be a reference point to what the chapter they're referring to. But if you would go to the curriculum manuals, it states on there that chapter 12 is the head of the department. I don't know if that's where we need to define that as, because I don't know if that'll change later date.
Yeah, if it changes, now we got to come back and revise this.
That's the same problem with NIMS. Maybe better off.
Just leave an applicable chapter.
Just applicable chapter.
Everybody,
I'm good
with it then?
Yeah. Any comments, questions, revisions? All right, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. We approve chapter 451, fire officer.
We're 449.
I'm sorry, 449, head of fire department. I'm sorry.
I'll second that.
Okay. Daniel Anderson seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
Rule review for C-37 TAC, Chapter 453, Hazardous Materials. This one either.
This is pretty short.
I'll read through it, but I'm not hazmat tech.
You probably got your incident commander, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Candace, have you heard anything from the hazmat committee of anything that they've had problems with this section?
As far as
interpretation,
they are about to meet at the first of the year for the first time to revamp, because hazmat has rolled over. So all the way from awareness to technician level. Will be looked at and reviewed for the new NFPA update.
So would it behoove us to maybe put a tab on this one to come back and revisit it here?
There's been a lot of changes, I will tell you that. A whole new mission specific has been added to HAZMAT. A lot of changes for that consolidation.
So we just leave it as is until it comes back?
Yeah, we can just prove it as is, knowing that we'll be revising it.
Same thing with the next one.
So would that be approving it as is or tabling it?
No, I think it would be back, because we don't know really what timeline they'll be on. And we can approve it as is now, knowing, and I'll just make a note to the commissioners that be looking for this to be revised in the near future.
And to that point, we're required by law to review them. You're not required to change them. You table this, it's only good for that six-month period, and that review is going to expire, and we're going to not be able to check the box that we reviewed it, so then we're going to be in violation of state law. So you're better off to recommend no changes, send it on through the review process, and then once the curriculum gets changed and manipulated, we'll have to change the rule, and that'll happen when that happens.
I make a motion to approve as is.
Okay, I got a motion from Jason.
Second.
Second from Keith. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
Item number four, rule review for the following D37 TAC Chapter 457, minimum standards for incident safety officer certification.
Okay, this one's real short, so.
I was just curious, Mike, the incident safety officer is defined as a member of the command staff. Is that necessarily, I don't think it makes a difference, but I'm curious how we got to that. Or is that from?
Most likely that comes from the fact that an incident safety officer can overrule an incident commander on the fire.
Okay.
And I'm just trying to go back.
I think that's the way
12 years
out.
Or so. That's probably where that's coming.
That's way out of the definition.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the way it's laid out by incident safety.
Yeah.
Or NIMS criteria. Yeah.
It's just curiosity. That's all. This is a short one, though, isn't it?
Yeah, this is real short. Okay.
Chair, I'll make a motion to accept as written.
Okay. Jason second. Has a motion to accept as is.
Second.
Jim second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so moved.
Item number five, subjects for future agenda items.
Well, should review that fire officer 1 and 2 requirements. No, I won't put that on there.
I think we wait until
The fire marshal
comes out, but I think it's a good, if it doesn't address it, then maybe we can look at it.
Yeah. Any Chief Wisco, staff have anything we need to throw on any
future?
We've
got anything, and I'm hesitant to say, but I think after these four we just did, I think we're done with the rule review. And this is going to enable us and the commissioners moving forward to get on a more focused schedule, because now we've got 3 years to get them done, and we can do them at a slower pace and be able to focus on them a little better.
Okay. So we don't we won't need a 2-day meeting for the next meeting.
Sitting here right now, I can't tell you that we would, but I'll also tell you I think we'll probably block the room for 2 days anyway, just to, because you never know what's going to come up.
Okay.
I don't think we're there
yet.
We're
not there yet.
I know. We're not there yet.
Okay, so is there anybody else in the room with anything we need to be discussing or looking at for future agenda? Anybody come from the audience today with something they want us to look at on the future agendas? Nothing? Okay.
They're saying, please stop the regulation. That's what they're saying.
All right, we're done with five then. There's no
action. Item six, future meeting dates.
Okay, Amanda.
So I blocked tentatively March 30th. I've got June 29th and then September 21st. This morning when I looked, December 14th was still available, but there's still other dates as well. But at the time that I blocked these, because it was less than a year out or more than a year out, I wasn't able to do the December date. So there is some movement with these if these dates don't meet y'all's availability.
Okay, so our next meeting is scheduled for March 30th?
Yes, sir.
Okay, are we going to set aside 2 days or one?
Right now, we only have it blocked for one. I think we'll probably go look and see if we have the room in case we need it, but right now, we're only going to go with one unless you get direction from the commissioners. Okay. They want you to do more.
We'll have an idea in January.
When does the legislature finish?
May 31st.
Shouldn't have. We shouldn't have anything.
I can't foresee you guys needing a 2-day meeting, but I think it's just like pre-fire planning. We're going to look and see if we can have the room if we need it, because the way things have gone the last year or so, I don't know what's going to come up.
Okay. So we got March 30th. We got June 29th?
Yes.
Is there anything that week before?
I can look and find out for sure.
Okay. The reason I'm just saying it's kind of close to the July 4th weekend, so if we could maybe look at that. I don't know about everybody else's.
Well, we can. I mean, instead of sitting here waiting just to look, I mean, we can look at that and tell you something in March. But, you know, we
right.
can look ahead a little bit.
And you said you had September 21st?
Yes, sir.
And tentatively when in December?
December
14th. 14th? I would see if the week before that is possible as well. But that's more than a year out, so we're certainly good with that. Okay, so March 30th is our next meeting. The commission meets in January. It's a 2-day workshop / meeting. If any of you are available to attend, and we will forward on our recommendations from this meeting to them at that time. Most importantly for Commissioner Hamilton, we'll get hopefully. Your committee will be done, and we can get 427 adopted. Thank you for being here with your committee again.
Item number 7, adjourn meeting.
I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make one.
Okay, Jason motions to adjourn.
Second.
Jim Reedy second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you, everybody. I appreciate it. Merry Christmas to everybody. Y'all have a great New Year's. Conclude our meeting.